Hello, and welcome to Sizzle Presents, a language and literacy podcast. We are the Center for the Interdisciplinary Study of Language and Literacy at Northern Illinois University. I'm Henry Thomaser, graduate assistant for Sizzle, and I'm joined today by Sizzle affiliate and Pop Grant Award winner, Duankamon Winichkun. Duankamon is a PhD candidate in the Department of Leadership, Educational Psychology, and Foundations here at Northern Illinois University. Her research centers on Thai teachers' professional identity formation and teaching Thai at the community-based heritage language schools. Welcome, Duankamon. We're thrilled to have you for this conversation.
Hi, Henry.
Okay, so just to start off, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and what your educational journey has been like?
I'm Duankamon Winichkun. I'm from Thailand. I'm a PhD student in educational psychology. I had my bachelor degree in French language and literature, and I have a master degree in applied linguistics for English language teaching. Such a different, you know, journey. I have my bachelor and my master in Thailand, and then I taught English as a second language at a university in Thailand for 3 years, and then I applied for a Fulbright foreign language teaching assistantship, and I win the award in 2017. So this award took me to Northern Illinois University, where I taught Thai. So after a year of teaching Thai at NIU, I was interested in educational psychology program, and then the following year, that when I got into the program.
So it sounds like you've had a lot of varied experiences with lots of different languages and teaching the Thai language. What was it that first got you interested in language and literacy?
I would say I am quite a rebellious person. As a kid, I really liked science and mathematics, and then I guess the turning point was when I was at the middle school. I grew my interest of language because it's just easy because I don't like my science teacher. And then my English teacher is really cool. She was a cool person. And then I think I watched something on the TV, and then they talk in English language, and then I don't understand anything at all at that time. So I was curious, like, what are they talking about? So, yeah, that when my interest in languages started.
Thank you. Why don't you tell us a little about your research?
My current research, I have three projects. My first project, of course, is the main project, is my dissertation. So my dissertation is on Thai teacher professional identity formation. Sizzle Pop Grant helped me a lot with this project. So I have a funding to go to Thailand to collect the data with the Thai pre-service and early career teachers. I interviewed 15 of them, and like basically my research is on qualitative side rather than quantitative. And the second one was my project with teaching Thai at the community-based heritage language schools. It was like my co-advisor asked me, like, do you want to do this? And I always a person who cannot say no to anyone. I would say yes. And it's interesting, and I have different interests. So I say yes to her, and then we were supposed to travel across the country, across the United States, to the different community-based heritage language school. And then it was in 2020, and then the COVID hit, so we cannot travel. I ended up like calling the participant, and we ended up using Zoom for interview for the first time. The third one was my another co-advisor, the dissertation advisor, and he bring this project to me, and I was like, why not? I'm going to volunteer whether or not it's going to be like RA like whether or not you have RA for me or not, I'm gonna volunteer. Is the project with Earth Atmosphere and Environment Department and Educational Psychology Department. We collaborate on the we do the research about high achieving, low income STEM majors, persistent and sense of belonging, like how social support support them throughout the year of them in the program.
So I expect a lot of our listeners aren't that familiar with the Thai language. Could you give us a quick overview of Thai and its characteristics?
Thai, so like if you don't know about Thailand, so first of all, Thailand is in Southeast Asia. Thailand is the only country that, you know, people speak Thai language. But fun fact, Thai and Lao languages are quite similar. Like for example, if I travel to Lao or Lao people travel to Thailand, we would have really few problems understand each other. We would understand each other quite easily. And another fact of Thai language is like, Thai language is a tonal language. Thai language has 5 tones. Like for example, I always use this example for my student because it's funny to me, for me at least. For example, if you say ba, it's a flat tone, right? Ba, that means throw something away. Okay, that's the flat tone, that tone one. Ba. But if you say ba is low to low tone or tone two. That means forest. And if you say ba, which is falling tone, or tone three, ba is mean auntie. And then if you say ba, it's mean daddy, it's mean dad. That the high tone. And the last one, if you say ba, that the rising tone, that means sugar daddy. So if you cannot make the tone right, the meaning change as well, and it's gonna be like total different things.
Yeah, you'll say the completely wrong thing, and it'll be embarrassing because the tone is changing the meaning of the word.
Yeah, like if you mean to say forest, and then you ended up saying sugar daddy, for example. Yeah, that's funny.
Well, that's a great way to explain tonal languages.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the fact is, when you teach Thai to Thai people, and then when you teach Thai to the foreigners, to non-Thai, I mean, the way of teaching are totally different. Because people who speak non-tonal language, sometimes they couldn't differentiate the sound. Like, for example, I have some students who speak non-tonal language only. They cannot differentiate between ba and ba. And the listener, you might try to differentiate these two tone, ba, ba. Or if I say 5 tone in a row, for example, ba, 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 ba. So if you teach the non-tonal language speaker, you cannot just say and then ask them to repeat it. You know, you have to come with a structure, and then that why I think like some researcher, they come up with the tonal box, but you have to learn like the different consonant and the different type of words and the different vowel and different tone. But for Thai speaker, Thai native, we can differentiate right away because we get used to it.
Right, so Thai speakers' ears are more attuned to the tones.
Yeah. I think so.
And so what strategies can you use for learners who don't come from tonal languages?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, like there's what called tonal box. So you have to learn consonant, you have to learn vowel, you have to learn different type of word to be able to identify the tone. And it's more complex than how the native learn.
So for non-native speakers, you have to like draw a lot of attention to the differences
right.
in tone.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that you have taught Thailand in the U.S. and that you've also taught in Thailand different subjects. So what is it like being a student or a teacher in Thailand versus in the U.S.?
Oh, that's really interesting questions. Like, my first year here in the U.S., it was life-changing, I guess. I was in a educational psychology class, actually, because I always interested in educational psychology. And I registered in the introduction course of educational psychology. And it's a discussion based. Like, student has to be active all the time. We have to read everything every week and then come up with the argument, exchange the idea, opinion with the classmate. Was such in Thailand when I was a student? I mean, like, probably nowadays it might change, but when I was a student, it's quite kind of lecture. Student will, teacher will talk a lot. Student will just sit in their seat, nice and neat. With some stricter teachers, they would just like talk all the time. And then if you make a move or, you know, talk to your friend or something, they would just like scold at you, for example. So it's more of a teacher-centered approach. But here in the U.S., it's more student-centered approach, and we have more interactive class, for example. Which is this really interesting, because I also wrote about this in my dissertation. Like, so Thailand is collectivist and high-powered, this tense society, versus the United States is more individualistic and low-powered, this tense. So when I talk about power distance, it means like the power contribution between teacher and student are unequal. For example, in Thailand, teacher will be like Mr. or Mrs. Know-all. You know, they know everything, and then you cannot question their knowledge because they are master of knowledge. And then when they give instruction, you just follow it without questions. Versus in the U.S., I think the first time it was kind of culture shock, because when I asked my professor some question and they asked me back some question to make me think, and I was like, why don't you give me the answer?
Right.
So it's kind of more interactive, I would say. And then you can question professor idea as well, right? You can challenge the idea. It's not like in Thailand, like when teachers say like 1 + 1 = 3, and it should equal 3. And if you think it's equal 2, you might think you may be wrong.
Yeah, so that was kind of a shock.
Yeah, it's kind of a shock. Like, I remember I spent many, many weeks to adjust to the discussion base and like paper writing, academic writing. Because in Thailand, you know, at least when I was student, that was like more than 15 years ago. It's kind of a teacher lecture, and then you take a note, and the assignment would be like more like you have some choice to choose, or the discussion is quite limited. Like, it's not like a long paper that I wrote here. Like, for example, teacher would give me some question and then you should discuss this within like 3 to 5 pages. So in Thailand, it would be like in one page or in half page. You just write briefly, or sometimes it's just like a fixed answer for everything.
Right. Being a student in the U.S., did you find that you had to like explore different ideas more within your writing, that it wasn't just a fixed answer?
Yeah, I have to be more active. Yeah. Like every week I have something to read and then I have to think about it as well. And if I have no idea about it, I have to go to professor or find a tutorial group. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, email my friend, ask for their input, for example.
And what about the differences of being a teacher in the U.S. versus Thailand?
Yeah, I still remember, like, it was a Thai class. It was intermediate Thai class. And I taught, it was like a cultural unit. And I taught about the 14 Lantern event in Thailand. It was in November where Thai people would make a flower basket and then float it into the river to worship the goddess of water. I remember I talked something about like this tradition begin in Sukhothai era, which is like the ancient era in Thailand. And then student asked something about history. Like the question is really deep. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. I'm not, you know, right. History teacher. So that gave me a lesson learned that everything that you said, you have to do research. Like, right. You have to explain it because otherwise student will ask you and you cannot give the answer. But in Thailand, like, if you say, like, oh, this event is start in Sukhothai era, and then student, like, okay, Sukhothai era, and then they take note, and then that's it.
Yeah, so like that's the answer.
Yeah, that's the answer. Okay, I have this answer, so I can write it in the exam.
That's very interesting, the differences between those two education styles. Okay, so I'm interested to know how you feel about the current Thai language system and how other students and teachers might feel. And do you know if there's any effort to change the system or update it?
You mean Thai educational system?
Yes, the Thai educational system.
That interesting question. And then, actually, I know because I just interviewed my dissertation participants. They were between 20 to 29, they're not over 30 yet. That was my target participants. So mostly they talk a lot about the rapid changing of the world. Like, you know, nowadays you cannot just talk about something and then hope that student will believe you without any question because student has a lot more access to internet. They have a lot more access to many social medias or YouTube. It's very easy, it's just a click. You cannot just say like 1 + 1 = 3 and then, you know, hopefully they believe you, right? Because they have so many ways to prove it. They have so many ways to construct the knowledge for themselves. And then this, my teacher participant, they mentioned a lot about like they have to adjust themselves to keep up with the rapid change of the world as well. So right now they try to do more like interactive classroom. And because of the Ministry of Education, they shift the policy from teacher-centered approach to student-centered approach as well. So the center of the class should be student. It not should be like teacher talk a lot the whole time and then student just take note. So right now it's kind of like shift toward like a project based that student own their project and teacher become a facilitator instead of being a giver of knowledge. So I can see some change in Thai educational system.
Yeah, That's extremely interesting. And so you're researching Thai teachers' identities and how they're forming. And so it sounds like they're having to adopt an identity of a facilitator rather than a leader of their own classrooms. Mm-hmm. And that kind of runs counter to a lot of what's expected in Thai society. So how do you see these teachers navigating that?
For younger teacher, I guess it might be easier because they came to the educational system with no a little experience of the old system.
Right?
They just start off with the new policy. But I think like what Thailand still need more is like mentorship. Because I remember when I start my career as a college instructor, I just freshly graduated from my master. And I was pre-served with teaching for only a semester, and then I start my full-time job and without mentor. So that's why it's really difficult to navigate as a new teacher. But for the more experienced teacher, I think they have the different struggle as well, because they have to adjust from the old method to the new method. And thinking about it, like when you do something for 30 years,
right,
and one day they say like, oh, you should change the way you do that thing. And it's not like you can change overnight. All we can think about like when we first have COVID and everything shift from face to face to online learning, right? Some of us like stuck on navigating using online platform to teach, for example. Some teacher just like teach the same way, but they just live stream their teaching to their students. So I think both new and experienced teacher have different struggle.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it seems like every teacher in the Thai system is kind of adjusting to this new, the new climate. What is the state of the Thai language in the United States?
That's interesting, because Thai language is not like a dominant language like Chinese, Japanese. So right now in the States, in the United States, not more than 10 universities offer Thai language. And fun fact, NIU is the only school in Illinois that offers Thai language.
Wow.
So at NIU, we offer Thai language as a foreign language. But actually, there's something that called heritage language as well. And mostly heritage language, Thai as a heritage language, is offered at the community-based language school. And the community-based language school is mostly they are affiliated with Thai Buddhist temple. At NIU, we teach Thai as a foreign language. But interestingly, there's something that called heritage language. And heritage language is the language that people learn at home. They learn by speaking and listening to their family members. And heritage language school is like always. So like, for example, in most of the Thai community, there is a Thai Buddhist temple. And at the Thai Buddhist temple, they have Sunday school. And at the Sunday school, they offer Thai language. Sometimes they also offer Thai dancing. They also offer Thai music and Thai culture. So at the temple, at the Sunday school at the temple, they taught Thai as a heritage language, mostly because, you know, people in the Thai community, they came to the temple to make merit or to participate in many kind of activity. They dropped their kid at school and for them to have more of like a structure lesson for them to learn, or sometimes, you know, they don't know to do with their kid on weekend. They just drop their kid off at school, or the parent want a few more hours for themselves. So like this kid, they are more fluent in speaking and listening, but for reading and writing, they need help because they didn't learn to read and write at home. They only communicate with their parent with their speaking and listening skills. And throughout the country, like most of the community-based heritage language school affiliate with the Thai Buddhist temple, and that can be a struggle for some learner as well because they didn't practice Buddhism. Interestingly, I found like some participants for that project. They say like, I don't practice Buddhism, so sometimes they hesitate to join the school.
Yeah. You mentioned participating and teaching Thai language classes as a process of merit making in the context of Buddhism. Could you say a little more about that?
Actually, it's not a process of merit making. Like, for example, so in the past in Thailand, the Buddhist temple is the center of everything. People go to the temple to study because the monk is a teacher. People go to the temple to make merit, or they go to the temple to participate in cultural or religious events, or they even go to the temple to socialize. And that kind of thing in Thailand is kind of fading away. But in the diasporic community, like in the US, people still go to the temple to do those kind of stuff. So they still learn Thai language at the temple. They still join cultural events at the temple, and they still socialize at the temple.
Yeah, so even still in the United States, the Thai Buddhist temples are kind of like a center for these communities.
Right.
I thought it was really interesting how these community-based schools had such high demand, but they were struggling to get the resources that they needed. Do you think you would want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Like, they don't have enough teacher, for example. They have to ask parents to volunteer. Sometimes they collect small fee from parents to support with the materials, and sometimes people who make merit at the temple give them the money, like donate the money. And they also got like funding from Thai consulate and embassy.
And are they getting enough resources, or do they need more?
I think in terms of money they would be okay, but in terms of like resources, like human resources, they need more of a well-trained teacher, because mostly it's like, you know, parents drop off their kid at school and some teacher at that school just randomly ask them, do you want to teach Thai, or, you know, do you have time to teach? Yeah. And they're like, in a year, each year they have also, they also have volunteer teacher from Thailand. They would travel here for a semester or for one academic year to teach Thai at this school as well. But it's lack of continuity because after a year they left. Right. Sometimes they make a collection of materials. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they left the textbooks, but like as I said, like teaching Thai for Thai student and teaching Thai for heritage student or teaching Thai for non-Thai student are totally different. So I guess some Thai volunteer teacher from Thailand, they still like they might have limited knowledge about heritage learners, and there's And some local volunteer teacher, they just remember what they've been taught as a kid. And then, so they use the same strategy to teach kids at the heritage language school.
Yeah, so it seems like a very big challenge for the community, because not only are all these teachers coming from all different types of backgrounds, and some of them are trained formally in language instruction, right?
And we cannot blame them because, you know, they're not trained to teach heritage language.
Yeah. Right. They're teaching all different types of students who have mm-hmm. different learning needs.
Right.
And they have all different types of materials. But I can see that there's such a big demand for this service in these communities of keeping their heritage language alive and giving young people of Thai heritage an opportunity to participate in this language learning and cultural transmission.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And I would say like the young Thai American or, you know, young Thai heritage language learners here, at least in Illinois that I met before, they probably represent their community. Like recently, there was called Thai Festival in Chicago, and this high schooler or even middle schooler, they probably represent the community by perform some Thai dancing or represent the Thai culture. Yeah, young Thai people, they probably represent the Thai community because they want people to know more about Thai people, Thai language, Thai culture, Thai events. Not just like, you know, people know only about Thai food because somehow it's become more popular.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that we highlighted that part. I think that's kind of like one of the core messages that I got from your research, is that like these communities are like, it's like a community-wide effort to keep the language instruction going.
Yeah, they don't want the language to kind of die. That because like the new generation didn't speak Thai anymore, for example. And then when they go to visit their relatives in Thailand, they cannot communicate with them, for example. So I think I really appreciate the young people and their parents, their effort to try to preserve Thai, to continue to learn Thai language and Thai culture.
Great. What forces do you think are motivating Thai individuals in the United States to carry on their language and culture?
Yeah, because that part of their identity, that part of who they are, and this kind of related to my identity research as well. Some Thai American or of Thai descendants, they always question themselves, just like the young teacher that question themselves, like, who am I as a teacher, or whether I am a teacher, right? And these Thai people who were born and raised in the States, they always ask themselves, like, who am I? Am I Thai enough? And I mean, like, there's no measurement or, you know, to measure, like, you are Thai enough or you're not Thai enough, because you're still Thai. Because you know something about Thai. Because you know something about Thailand. You can speak Thai. You know about Thai culture. And their perception of who they are as a Thai person, right? I can say the benefit of it. Like when they go back to Thailand, they can connect to their root. They can connect to their grandparent, for example. They can communicate with them. Because like, you know, some older generation, they don't speak any languages except Thai, right? So when their grandkids came back from the state, they can talk to their grandkid, and grandkid can connect to their grandparents, and you know, their family story can continue. You know, you can make a connection, for example.
Yeah, that's great. It's extremely valuable, those connections.
And actually, earlier we have another project.
Oh, okay.
It's called Thai Oral History. And we recruit like 6 high schoolers in Illinois. So they were former heritage language students. And this project is particularly these 6 students interview their grandparents about family history. So we can make kind of like a collection of who are Thai people in the US who are Thai immigrant in diaspora, for example. Because like right now the grandparents are in their 70s, 80s, and this project initiated because like, you know, we don't want the story to gone with that those first generation immigrants. So yeah, it's a good project. And we can see the concrete evidence that these high schoolers who learn Thai language can communicate with their grandparents to make oral history project.
Right, and not only are they learning the Thai language, but they're learning about their roots and who their ancestors are.
Yeah, who their ancestry are and who they are. And then they can understand more of their identity.
That's really cool. That's a really cool project. Tell me a little about your research involving students in STEM.
Actually, this is really challenging for me because STEM is a big buzzword. You know, when I saw the word STEM, I kind of freak out because I'm a humanity and social science and language nerd. I have nothing to do about STEM at all. But this is interesting because it's a collaboration between the Department of Earth, Atmosphere and Environment and the Department of Leadership, Educational Psychology and Foundation. And again, my co-dissertation advisor brought this project to me and then I cannot say no. So I say yes. And this project is particularly about high-achieving low-income STEM major. This project is particularly about social support, sense of belonging, and persistence of high-achieving low-income STEM majors. So it's really interesting when you when we talk about like social support and sense of belonging. For example, me myself as an international student. When I first came here and everything seemed to be so different. And the first thing that come to my mind is like, oh, I don't belong here. I have no support. I have no outlet. And I don't have friends, for example. But that's not true. Because, and again, luckily because NIU has different kind of center for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like, for example, we have Center for Southeast Asian Studies. They have we have Center of Black Studies, Latino Studies, Asian American Studies. And for myself, I'm from Thailand in Southeast Asia, so Center for Southeast Asian Studies is kind of an outlet for me. I can join like many kind of events and connect to people from the same region and make me feel belong at NIU. And it's also like a social support when I have, for example, when study getting hard and I have mental breakdown, I can go to a fun event around the campus. I think that's a good thing about NIU, that we have a lot of diverse group of students and diverse interests.
Yeah, so just like these students in this study that you worked on and co-authored, how how that social support was like improving their resilience and giving them social capital and avenues to achieve things. Would you say that was kind of the same for you and your involvement on campus?
Yeah, like according to the research, they got a scholarship to support their financial needs because they from low income background. And every week during the project, every week they will have a weekly meeting where they talk to each other and they kind of exchange that experience during the week. And then also there was a kind of near peer mentor was like grad student who has the same experience with this group of students. So this weekly meeting give them kind of a sense of community. And actually our first paper got published earlier last year in 2024. And the title, I really like the title. The title is like, "We Are All in This Together." So it makes this group of students feel they belong somewhere. And together they can do something. They can achieve their goals.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thank you so much, Duongkamon, for joining us for this conversation. It was a really amazing experience learning about all of your research. I know our listeners can really learn a lot from your unique experiences and from your research. And we're just really thrilled to have you today for this conversation.
Thank you for having me. That was great.
This has been Sizzle Presents, a language and literacy podcast, and we hope you'll tune back next time.
Sizzle Presents is brought to you by the Center for the Interdisciplinary Study of Language and Literacy at Northern Illinois University. Music was performed by the NIU Steel Band, arranged by Yuko Asada.